Before we get started with this episode, I wanted to let you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In honor of this, I'm making my signature course, Resiliency Sprint, 50% off just for podcast listeners. You also get lifetime access to CBT Family Toolbox, over 100 activities, resources, and ideas to bring cognitive behavioral tools to your family. Head to childanxietysupport.com/resiliencysprint to learn all about this foundational course. And when you sign up, use code PODCAST to get 50% off both the coached and uncoached versions. This offer is only good till May 31st, so make sure you sign up now. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Child Anxiety FAQ podcast. FAQ stands for Frequently Asked Questions, and I'll be answering your questions about child and teen anxiety. My name is Dawn Friedman, and I've been working with kids and families for more than 30 years. Now I run Child Anxiety Support, a membership program for parents of anxious kids and teens. Let's get started. I recently had a question from a listener whose child has separation anxiety because of the recent death of a caregiver. I did reach out to this family privately, but I wanted to cover the topic of anxiety that's the result of trauma on the podcast as well. Before the most recent DSM update, that's when we were using the DSM-4, PTSD was listed as an anxiety disorder. But as the field has become more trauma-informed, it is now listed in the DSM-5 as a trauma and stress-related disorder. This shift recognizes that PTSD is not just a subset of anxiety, and in fact, anxiety is an adjunct of PTSD, at least in the context of PTSD. So there are anxiety disorders separate, and then PTSD is its own thing under trauma and stress-related disorders, and anxiety is one of the symptoms. The new diagnosis recognizes that the most pressing concern for a child diagnosed with PTSD is to address the trauma. The anxiety may drive behavior that inspires the intervention. That is, the child may be displaying separation anxiety, and that's the reason the family is reaching out for help. But the underlying reason the child is having separation anxiety is the trauma of losing a family member. I'm going to use this episode to talk a little bit more about trauma. It's a word we use a lot in our popular discussion, and we don't always use it correctly, as in diagnostically correctly. The DSM defines trauma as, quote, actual or threatened death, serious injury, or sexual violence. You can see that's very limited and very specific, and it doesn't include the way we use trauma even in the therapy field. So sometimes therapists will talk about trauma or being traumatized, and they're not using this DSM definition. They're using a more popular definition. Counselors might include broader upsetting or disturbing events. So we might call a divorce a trauma or being fired from a job a trauma. But technically, per the DSM diagnosis, these would not be trauma, although they would certainly be upsetting, and they certainly deserve attention and care. Now, I personally have no interest in gatekeeping the word trauma. If someone tells me an experience was traumatizing for them, I'm not going to say, well, technically, I don't think you can claim that term. Instead, I'm going to offer support. But when it comes to figuring out what to do next, as far as reaching out for help for ourselves or our children and how to treat or address a situation, we do need to be clear about what is clinically defined as traumatic and what is not. I mention this because I've talked to many parents of anxious children who are using the term traumatized or trauma to describe their child's experience of anxiety, and this is making it difficult for parents to address the anxiety. They are understandably concerned that pulling back from the parenting pitfalls and exposing their child to the things that make them anxious will traumatize their child. They are confusing upset with trauma. And I think we need to be very clear that being upset is very different than being traumatized. So let's go back to that DSM definition of, quote, actual or threatened death, serious injury, or sexual violence. The key here is threatened, which means that even if we weren't actually in danger, if we believe we were, truly believed it, that we may in fact experience trauma. This is a big concern about active shooter drills in schools. If kids aren't aware that it's a drill, this can absolutely be traumatizing. Let's dig into the diagnosis for PTSD, that is post-traumatic stress disorder, per the current DSM. For that diagnosis, the child must have been exposed to actual or threatened death, serious injury, or sexual violence, either directly experiencing it, witnessing it happening to someone else, or learning that it did happen to a parent or caregiver or other close family member or friend. The DSM expressly states that this does not include media, such as watching a violent movie or seeing an upsetting picture. That said, research does show that exposure to these images can further traumatize an already traumatized child. Again, this is the DSM diagnosis, and I'm not saying that kids can see scary or violent movies and not be bothered by them. Of course they can be, and they are, but we're talking about the diagnosis. If the child has this exposure history, then we look at symptoms. Because not every person who experiences a potentially traumatic event is going to develop PTSD. Two children can be in a car accident. One child might develop PTSD and another child will not, for a lot of reasons. But let's get back into those symptoms. The first set of symptoms are what we call intrusive symptoms. These include distressing memories that reoccur. Sometimes the child won't seem upset, but will play these memories out repetitively. When I worked at a family shelter, many of the children I worked with would act out the police coming to arrest someone in their house over and over again. This would be an example of distressing memories that reoccur. They may have nightmares or bad dreams about the event. This might also include a child who wakes up crying, not because they had a nightmare, but because they are dreaming about the person that they lost. Dissociative reactions, those are also called flashbacks, where children act as if the event is happening again. And again, we may see this expressed through play. These children might be increasingly distressed when they're exposed to things that remind them of the event, like a child who gets upset driving through the intersection where they were in a car wreck. Children may also display symptoms of avoidance, and those might include refusing to go into the room where that person died, avoiding conversations about the traumatic event or the person who is involved in the traumatic event, disinterest in play or other activities that used to interest them, the presence of negative emotional states like sadness or confusion or fear. These children might withdraw socially and just not be able to have fun. Other symptoms might include sleep disturbances, irritability or anger. This might look like tantrums and meltdowns, difficulty concentrating, hypervigilance, which is being super tuned into the possibility of danger, and they may have an exaggerated startle response. You can see how PTSD at one point was confused with anxiety, since anxiety shares many of these symptoms. So what's the difference? The biggest difference is the presence of that traumatic event. There are several treatments with a strong evidence base for young kids with a PTSD diagnosis. These include trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, or TFCBT, parent-child interaction therapy, and child-parent psychotherapy. All three of these treatment modalities include the parents. The younger the child is, the more vital it is that parents are included in the therapy. And this is because relationships mitigate trauma. Strong relational attachments, healthy attachments, help heal trauma. EMDR, or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, is also a recognized treatment for trauma. And if you're interested in exploring this, I would recommend that you contact MDRIA at emdria.org. Doing EMDR with children is a very specialized skill. The practitioner needs to be trained in children, in working with children, and what is developmentally appropriate for kids. And they also need to be trained in EMDR. MDRIA has high standards for the people who can be listed in their directory, and they don't allow every single training to go towards that listing. Sometimes a clinician might take a weekend class and feel like they're ready to go, and MDRIA would say, nope, you need to take things more slowly. You need to be getting supervision and consultation. So I would go to MDRIA in order to find a truly qualified therapist. Children heal best in the context of a loving, supportive relationship with a caregiver who is dependable and trustworthy and who is working on their own stuff. If you are part of the traumatic event, if you experienced the traumatic event with your child, then you're likely going to need to do your work too. If your child has medical trauma, it's very likely you were traumatized by watching them go through that. Trauma treatment is meant to help the person process the traumatic event so they can move through it. Now, I'm going to explain this in a super simplified, not scientific way, but basically, trauma glitches our brains. It gets us stuck. Note that those intrusive symptoms I mentioned before are all about stickiness, nightmares, memories we can't shake, being triggered back into our trauma response when confronted by a reminder, avoiding those things that make us think of the trauma. Treatment helps us unglitch our brains. Children who play out the traumatic event repetitively are trying to unglitch. People who talk about their trauma over and over again are trying to unglitch. They're trying to push through to understanding so they can let it rest. Sometimes we all need help pushing through those stuck places, and that includes kids. It's important that the therapist a family chooses does have specific training in trauma because inappropriate treatment can be re-traumatizing. For example, our thinking used to be that people needed to remember the traumatic event. You'll see that in movies all the time, where somebody can't remember what happened to them, and all of the therapy is about remembering it. Maybe that's even the plot of the movie, of uncovering what happened. And the big climactic moment in the movie is when they finally remember it. Maybe there's even showing a flashback and the person's face is all wide open. Oh, that's what happened. But actually, not remembering can be protective, and healing does not always require us to uncover those distressing memories. Trauma therapists need to understand that, and they need to let people go at their own pace to know when to gently support them through and when to help them hold back and re-regulate. Okay, so back to the question that inspired the episode. How do I address anxiety that's the result of trauma? And the answer is, you don't. First, you address the trauma. And through the trauma treatment, then you are addressing the anxiety symptoms. For the child who has typical anxiety, a sort of generalized anxiety, an anxiety that isn't traced back to a specific event, then we are going to treat the anxiety. But if we can trace it back, if the child was in a car accident and is now afraid of being in a car, or if a child lost a caregiver and is now afraid of letting their other caregiver out of their sight, that's trauma, and we need to address the trauma. On the other hand, a child who just never really grew out of their age-appropriate separation anxiety, that's a child who needs help with anxiety. If you're confused about the difference, then reach out to a professional and ask them. Thanks for tuning in this week. And if you have a question you'd like me to address on the show, you can reach out to me by going to childanxietysupport.com and submitting a question there. You can also check out the program while you're there. And if you'd like to learn more about whether or not it would be a good fit for your family, feel free to reach out for a quick consult call.
Thanks so much, and I'll see you next week.